there is a map on the wall of almost every op center in the world. And for the better part of the last 2 years, a significant chunk of that map, a corridor stretching from the Persian Gulf through the Red Sea and up into the Levant, has been colored red. Off limits. Avoid, not today. That kind of airspace closure doesn't just inconvenience passengers. It reshapes the economics of an entire airline. And for Air India, one of the world's busiest long-haul carriers, those red zones have meant longer routes, higher fuel burns, and a lot of rethinking about where to fly and when. Now, with conditions beginning to stabilize, Air India is reported to be considering reversing some of the international schedule cuts it made during the height of the tensions. This is ITES on Radio Hangar. I'm Tower. Today's aviation news is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. Let's start with the geography because it matters. When we talk about the Middle East airspace situation, we're talking about a corridor that is critically important to some of the most traveled routes on Earth. India to Europe. India to North America via European connections. The Gulf carriers, Emirates, Qatar, Etihad, all operate out of hubs that sit right at the crossroads of that airspace. And when Iran, Iraq, Yemen, and the surrounding zones start issuing NOTAMs that effectively shut down large swaths of controlled airspace to commercial traffic, everyone has to find another way around. Think about it the way you'd think about a TFR over a major event. Suddenly, there's a big chunk of airspace you can't touch, and you've got to route around it. Now scale that up. We're talking about rerouting a Boeing 747 or a Boeing 777 around a zone that adds potentially 2 to 3 hours to a flight. That's not just an inconvenience. That's fuel. That's crew duty time. That's whether a nonstop is even legally operable under crew rest rules. Air India operates routes between India and Europe, the United Kingdom and North America that would normally route over or near those affected zones, routes from Delhi and Mumbai to London, Paris, Frankfurt, routes connecting to the Gulf for onward connections to the United States. When those airways closed or became operationally hazardous, Air India had choices. Fly the longer way around, reduce frequency, or in some cases suspend certain routes entirely. According to reporting from Aerotime, Air India is now taking a closer look at reversing some of those reductions. The reasons are exactly what you'd expect. Conditions in the region have calmed enough that some of those airways are becoming usable again. When the airspace opens back up, the economics change overnight. A route that wasn't viable at 3 hours of extra fuel burn suddenly makes sense again when you can fly the direct corridor. Now, here's the piece that doesn't always make it into the headline. Airspace conflicts don't just affect the airlines flying over them, they create ripple effects across the entire system. When airlines reroute, they're not just burning more fuel, they're changing their slot times at destination airports, they're adjusting connections, they're sometimes flying different aircraft types because the longer routing requires a different range capability. Air India has been in the middle of a massive modernization push. They've taken delivery of new Airbus A350 aircraft. They've got Boeing 787 Dreamliners in the fleet. And they're in the process of transforming from a legacy state carrier into something that can compete with the Gulf carriers on their own turf. That modernization effort makes the airspace situation both more painful and, paradoxically, more manageable. The newer aircraft are more fuel efficient, which means they can absorb some of the extra routing costs better than older airframes could. But it also means the airline is carrying significant debt load from fleet expansion precisely when routes are being compressed. Getting those routes back is not just a revenue story, it's a strategic story. Let me put this in terms a general aviation pilot can connect with. You've probably dealt with TFRs that went up around a wildfire or a presidential movement. You reroute. You eat some extra time and fuel. Maybe you delay the trip, but the TFR lifts and you file the direct route again. What Air India has been living through is essentially a multi-month, multi-country TFR situation, except the stakes involve hundreds of aircraft and hundreds of thousands of passengers. The broader picture here is about how geopolitics and aviation are permanently intertwined, and that's something pilots should understand at a fundamental level. Whether you're flying a Cessna 172 or a wide-body airliner, airspace is sovereign. Countries own their airspace, and they can close it, they can charge for it, they can make it contingent on diplomatic relationships. When India and Pakistan have a political flare-up, Indian carriers lose access to Pakistani airspace, and their routes to Europe get longer. When Iran closes its airspace or becomes operationally unsafe to transit, carriers from dozens of countries have to find alternates. This isn't new. The Soviet Union used to charge Western carriers enormous fees to fly the transpolar routes because they were the only ones who could authorize them. What is new is the speed at which these situations now develop and resolve or don't. Social media, drone warfare, precision missile strikes, these have changed the nature of conflict in ways that make airspace risk assessment much more dynamic than it used to be. The International Air Transport Association, or IATA, and aviation authorities around the world are constantly revising their risk assessments for conflict zones. Airlines have entire departments dedicated to tracking these situations in real time. The question Air India is now wrestling with is essentially a risk management question that every operator faces. How confident are you that the conditions that make a route viable today will still exist next week, next month? You can't sell tickets on routes you're not confident you can fly. And that's the interesting tension in the aerotime reporting. Air India is considering reversals, not committing to them. The word considering is doing a lot of work in that sentence. They're watching the situation. They're modeling the economics. They're probably in conversations with their insurance underwriters and with IATA about the current risk classification of those corridors. Scheduling at a major international carrier isn't like filing a VFR flight plan. These schedules are published months in advance. Slots at major airports, Heathrow, Charles de Gaulle, Frankfurt are some of the most valuable assets an airline owns. You give up a slot, you may not get it back. So when an airline pulls back from a route, they're not just saving money on that flight. They're making a long-term bet about whether the route is viable, and they're risking their airport real estate if they wait too long to come back. For Air India specifically, the stakes are particularly high because of who they're competing with. Emirates, Qatar Airways, and Etihad, the big three Gulf carriers, all have hubs right in the middle of this region. They're extremely well-positioned to offer one-stop connections between India and Europe or North America. If Air India can't offer competitive non-stop service, passengers route through Dubai or Doha. And once a passenger builds a travel habit around a certain connection, it's hard to win them back. This is where the airspace situation has a secondary competitive effect. Every month that Air India can't fly the direct route efficiently, the Gulf carriers pick up market share. Reversing that takes time, even after the airspace reopens. So the news here is genuinely significant for Indian aviation and for the international market. But it's also a good reminder that the map of commercial aviation is never static. Routes open and close based on factors that have nothing to do with demand or aircraft capability. They close because a country is at war, or because a missile system makes overflight too hazardous, or because a diplomatic relationship soured. If you want to understand how deeply geopolitics and commercial aviation are intertwined, spend some time looking at the history of transpolar routes, or the opening of Chinese airspace to Western carriers in the 1980s, or the way the Russian invasion of Ukraine in 2022 closed off Siberian routes and added hours to flights between Europe and Asia. The aircraft don't care. The passengers don't care. But the routing absolutely does. From a pilot perspective, and I mean this for everyone listening, not just the airline crews, understanding airspace as a geopolitical resource is part of understanding the full picture of aviation. When you're filing across country and you check for NOTAMs, you're doing a small version of what Air India's route planners do at a global scale. You're asking, is this airspace available to me? Is it safe? What's the alternate? The answers change, sometimes daily. Now, a few things worth watching as this Air India situation develops. First, watch for formal schedule announcements. A carrier saying it's considering reversals is not the same as announcing them. The actual move back into those corridors will likely be phased, maybe one or two routes first, then a broader reinstatement if conditions hold. Second, watch the conflict zone NOTAMs directly. If you're interested in the specifics of what's open and what's not, organizations like IATA and National Aviation Authorities publish ongoing risk assessments for conflict zones. The FAA and the Transportation Security Administration both issue advisories for areas where U.S. carriers operate. These documents are publicly available, and they're actually quite detailed about why a particular corridor is flagged. Third, keep an eye on the insurance market. Aviation war risk insurance is a real thing, and the premiums for flying through conflict zones can be significant. When insurers see stabilization, they start adjusting rates, and that's often an early signal that the commercial operators are about to follow. Finally, this story is a reminder that airline capacity, the number of seats available on a given route, is not determined by demand alone. Geopolitics, infrastructure, regulatory approval, airspace access, these all shape what routes exist and how frequently airlines can fly them. For passengers, that means price signals. When capacity compresses, prices go up. When it opens back up, prices ease. Understanding that dynamic helps make sense of why airfare on certain routes can be so volatile. For Air India, a return to full international schedules would be meaningful. They're a carrier in the middle of a significant transformation, competing in one of the fastest-growing aviation markets in the world. India is projected to become one of the two or three largest aviation markets globally within the next decade, and Air India wants to be positioned to serve that demand with its own metal, not just feed traffic to foreign hubs. Whether the conditions in the Middle East hold long enough to make those scheduling decisions stick, that's the question nobody can fully answer today. Aviation has learned to operate in uncertainty. It always has. Sources for today's program include AeroTime. Additional context on airspace policy and carrier economics drawn from publicly available reporting and industry publications. Find us at RadioHangar.com. That's ATIS for today. I'm Tower, clear skies.